KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all white light, speakers and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood, Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Andrew Jarecki, director of the new Ryan Gosling psycho thriller, All Good Things. The filmmaker behind the documentary Capturing the Friedmans talks about his new feature based on a really dark and crazy true life story. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So the awards race is sort of starting to somehow take shape. We have the Indie World recognizing their world with a bunch of nominations for the Spirit Awards. And we also have the National Board of Review coming out strongly for The Social Network.
National Board of Review is in some ways one of those mysterious organizations
<It is.
laughs> that is probably on the same level as the Hollywood Foreign Press, meaning you have no idea who these people actually are. But
fans,
because they're
academics, that's how they describe it.
But because they come out first, regardless of their dubious backgrounds, they do carry some weight. And I think it's very obvious that they have given a lot of momentum to Social Network, which was picked not only for best film, but in a number of other categories.
Director, actor, screenplay.
Yeah, and picking Jesse Eisenberg over Colin Firth for King's Speech, I mean, I don't say that's a whopper, but that was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, last year I think they went for Up in the Air, which didn't win, but, you know, it became perceived, as you make the point, as a serious, serious contender. And at this point, to me, in the large picture scale, it's starting to be kind of a King's Speech versus Social Network. Unless the one film that, you know, is still emerging is True Grit, which has a certain potential Academy sheen, Coen Brothers, Jeff Bridges, and a bunch of others who are, you know, luminaries. Doesn't it feel that way to you?
It does. It does. And I think what is also encouraging is if you look at the Spirit Award nominations, I do agree that it's probably going to come down to some sort of battle between Social Network and The King's Speech. But I think if you look at the nominations for the Spirit Awards, there are a lot of movies that are going to be significant competitors in a number of top Oscar categories. The Best Picture picks for the Spirit Awards were 127 Hours, Black Swan, The Kids Are All Right, Winter's Bone, and Greenberg. Probably that's not going to be a big contender.
Yeah.
And Jennifer Lawrence, who starred in Winter's Bone, I suspect is going to be a nominee for Best Actress. So I think, it will be Social Network and King's Speech right now as front runners, but I think it's a very wide field, especially with 10 nominees for Best Picture.
I mean, yes, the good news is there's 10 nominees for Best Picture, so some of these pictures will get a platform, these smaller pictures. And the bad news is they still, to me, feel, you know, somewhat ghettoized a little bit. You know, these are darker movies. Winter's Bone is a very dark movie about a family ripped apart by drug abuse, and Black Swan, 127 Hours, all challenging subject matter. And I don't know that the Academy is going to want to necessarily go beyond the nomination for those books.
But one thing I will say a lot of these nominations do prove is that a lot of people have complained that the Sundance Film Festival has become a little too arty and it's gone too far back to its independent roots. But both Winter's Bone and The Kids Are All Right debuted at Sundance. So I think in some ways the awards that have been announced validate that Sundance is not completely wrong in the movies it's picking.
Well, I have to say, John, that was a lovely transition to the announcement that Sundance has made of what films are going to be in contention this year. And, you know, just to talk about it in broad strokes, because nobody's heard of any of these movies yet, John Cooper, now in his second year running it, he's still sticking to his guns. He's not concerned about commercial prospects. You know, the days when we were looking for Napoleon Dynamite and Little Miss Sunshine and these big popular movies that make millions of dollars to come out of Sundance, he says, are over. And that was a criticism before, that they went too far towards commercial pandering. And he is not going there.
Especially in the competition films. I mean, I think you can look at the premiere section where there's, you know, a fair number of high-profile actors and some recognizable directors. But if you look at the dramatic and documentary competition films, I mean, the better known names are actors who were at Sundance Films in years past. Vera Farmiga, who was nominated for Up in the Air, has made her directorial debut with a dramatic feature about religion. Michael Rapaport, a very well-known Sundance character actor, has made a documentary about hip-hop music. But you really have to get into the premiere section of the festival where you see recognizable actors. And I think that's the way Cooper and his Sundance staff want it. They want the festival to go back toward its as far from Hollywood as possible roots. And I think they've largely succeeded, at least on paper.
And even with that, didn't a bunch of films come out last year that turned out to be real successes?
I think where Sundance was particularly strong earlier this January is in its selection of documentary films. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences a couple of weeks ago came out with its shortlist for documentary features. And among the 15 finalists, 7 premiered in Park City. Exit Through the Gift Shop, Enemies of the People, Gasland, Restrepo, The Tillman Story, Waiting for Superman, and Wasteland. A lot of people have said for years that Sundance's real strength is nonfiction filmmaking, and I think it was validated last year and suspect it will be validated again this year. In fact, documentary filmmaking has gotten so good that they created a new category called documentary premieres, which is to recognize more established nonfiction filmmakers.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. If the new movie All Good Things was simply based on a fictional story, you'd say it was over the top. But in fact, it's inspired by a real and sensational missing persons case and a couple of subsequent murders. The tale centers on Robert Durst, the troubled son of a powerful New York real estate magnate. In 1982, Durst's wife Kathy went missing, and some suspected he had a role in her disappearance. Years later, his good friend, who was believed to have information about the wife's fate, was murdered in Los Angeles. Later, Durst, living in Texas, was arrested after the dismembered body of his neighbor was found floating in Galveston Bay. Durst, who had been disguising himself as a mute woman, went on the lam. When he was finally apprehended, he admitted killing the neighbor, but argued that he had acted in self-defense. He was convicted only of illegal disposal of the body and served about 3 years in prison. Today, he is free. The movie All Good Things stars Ryan Gosling as the Robert Durst character, or David Marks in the film. Kirsten Dunst plays the wife, and Frank Langella is the cold and powerful father.
Your grandfather didn't ask me to join the firm. It was understood.
Gotta finish up some stuff from my father.
I've never been closer to anyone, and I don't know you at all.
David, is there something wrong with you?
You make me out to be this person that you think that I am. I'm not this person.
Why would you give up everything just because of him?
All Good Things is directed by Andrew Jarecki. It's his follow-up to his first film, the Oscar-nominated 2003 documentary, Capturing the Friedmans. Jarecki and his partner Mark Smerling produced the controversial documentary Catfish earlier this year, but this is the first film they've made since Capturing the Friedmans.
This was a story that always interested me because, you know, it sort of first appeared as a story about this wealthy guy in Westchester who had this beautiful wife and suddenly she disappeared. And I guess it interested me because of his background, and his background in some ways was similar to mine. And then the story popped up again years later because suddenly 18 years later, his best friend is murdered and
right.
Nobody's really putting the pieces together of story A and story B. They're just saying, well, this woman was murdered in Los Angeles. We think her manager did it. But it seemed like there was more of a connection
right.
there. And then finally, a few years later, a body turns up in Galveston Bay and now this is the same person. And so
you had a moment where you decided that this was the one to do?
You know, it was a reluctant moment because I think it's like deciding to have like your fifth child or something. You want to do it. You know it could be amazing, but you know how much work it's going to be.
So how did you finance it?
I mean, we sort of just did the work without anyone. You know, we started to go out and research it as if we were going to do a documentary.
That's a luxury that not many filmmakers really, I guess, have. But it's a
good
thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know people, you know, people certainly work on films for a long time and they have whatever their day job is. And it's really hard to do those two things. But I think, you know, it gives you the luxury of being able to really get deeply into a story without necessarily knowing that there's a market for it,
right,
or how the, what the poster is going to look like.
Right.
So for me, I'm just more interested in the story. And I figured a movie would come out of it eventually if we were able to get to the essence of this person. It was such an incredible mystery and nobody really understood it. And I thought, also, if we write it right, we're going to get terrific actors to be in it, and we're going to be able to explore this in a way that nobody has before.
So at what point do you have to move into, okay, now we're paying for it and we're trying to get the terrific actors?
We ended up making a little documentary just because we didn't know what else to do with all these interviews that we had shot.
You know,
we went out and talked to all these different people. And my goal in doing that was, A, to collect real, quirky, odd stories about this.
These are people who were friends of his or associates?
Friends of his or friends of the couple or police officers that were
right.
involved. You know, all these,
yeah.
and her brother, her family.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, we learned a lot from doing that. And there are incredible scenes in the movie now. There's a scene where Frank Langella's character takes them out for lunch after the wedding. And they have this sort of anemic, sad little lunch. And at the end of it, you know, he makes her mother split the check with him.
Right.
That really happened. You know, I don't know how we could have written
you
that.
You don't make you that know. Stuff up, right.
So anyway, we went out and we got these remarkable little moments that were very telling. And then while we were doing that research, we also realized that it was going to be incredibly valuable for the actors, because then when I sat down with Ryan, I could show him that. When I sat down with Kirsten and Frank, I could show them that.
So at what point do you then move to talking to the actors? And the Weinsteins come in at some point in this process?
When we had the script, that people started taking interest in it and it was on the blacklist, and all of a sudden
so you
everybody
commissioned
was talking
the script.
About the script. Mark and I worked on it first, and then we brought in a guy named Marcus Hinchy, who is a talented screenwriter, and we realized that the three of us needed to go out and do these interviews together. So even though Marcus was a screenwriter, we trained Marcus how to be a sound man. And Mark is a DP, and so my partner Mark shot these interviews, and I did the interviews, and Marcus did the sound. And so the three of us would wander around and talk to all these different people. And at the end of the day, we had the three of us who were going to be involved in developing the script had visited every single one of these people. So we all could say, well, what about that story we heard from this person? Or what about the story about the wedding
right.
lunch?
And so you develop your script that way.
Yeah.
And then how is the film becoming more real?
Ultimately, we had a lot of people that wanted to work on it. And Michael London's company, Groundswell, had done some really interesting films. I like Michael. And he said, yeah, I really love this film and I want to be part of it and we'll finance it. And, you know, that meant that we then had to go out and cast it. And, you know, we'll finance it often means we'll go through the process with you. And if it turns out that you can't cast it in a way that's bankable, we will move
Run
on
away.
To something
yes.
else.
But,
you know,
you.
To Michael's credit, I think, you know, he I think, believed strongly in the film. And Bruna Papandreou, the other producer with me and Mark, was really passionate about it. And so we knew already that we wanted Ryan and Kirsten and Frank. We knew that we might have to go around the block a little bit, but that we would try to come back to them. And Ryan had been somebody that we had pursued, but that's a hard thing to do. You know, I remember a friend of mine in Hollywood who worked at a studio said, oh, yeah, well, Ryan's ungettable. He's ungettable. And I would say, what does that mean? He said, oh, he won't do it. He doesn't do anything. So we were told a lot of things. I guess we were told you can't cast the girl before you cast the boy. But Ryan was reading the script and we hadn't reached a conclusion with him. And
who was giving you that sage advice?
Everybody's, you know, agencies say it and, mm-hmm. you know, producers say it. They always say, you
but
know,
why
you
can't you cast the girl?
This is one of those things that everybody in Hollywood knows, but nobody ever says,
nobody. Okay.
which is that the guy is usually the bankable star.
Oh, right. Of course.
And therefore, mm-hmm. if you want your bankable star to say yes to your movie, you don't want to go in there and say, by the way, I've picked a girl to be your baguette to your diamond, and she's somebody that you're not crazy about working with. You don't think that she's up to it or whatever. There's a risk of that. But I guess we just felt like we were so committed to her that I think we felt that if we brought it to an actor and the actor didn't see what we saw in her, that would tell us something about
right.
that pairing and maybe we should have a different guy. In Ryan's case, I thought he would respond well to her, and he did.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Andrew Jarecki, director of the new movie All Good Things, starring Ryan Gosling, Kirsten Dunst, and Frank Langella. It's a dark thriller inspired by a real-life, high-profile missing persons case. Originally, the Weinstein Company had signed on as the U.S. distributor, and it was with that promise that funding was secured and shooting began. But eventually, the Weinsteins pulled out. I asked Jarecki if the reason was financial or creative.
Well, often I think when you have a creative dispute with somebody or a financial dispute, it is both because, you know, somebody will say, well, I don't want to spend the money on X, Y, or Z. And you say, why not? And they'll say, well, I have a different creative view. It became really clear at a certain point that the movie was working at a lot of levels. We went through the process of the we love it, and then we went through the process of testing it with audiences, and audiences responded well to it. But it was a big commitment. We were really planning on a pretty wide release for the movie, and it wasn't the right timing for us to do that with Weinstein.
Now, I know Harvey reasonably well, and I know that he can get upset that happened.
Well, you know, we had a lot of we certainly talked a lot. I think he made a contribution to the film, and
give me what kind?
Harvey has a remarkable ability to figure out things in the movie that don't work.
Uh-huh.
And he gives you a series of ideas of things that might work better.
Uh-huh.
And in my experience, when I fight those kinds of suggestions or when I feel I'm reacting against them, I usually come back a couple days later and I think, he's sort of right that part of the movie is slow. It he's like the grain of sand that irritates the oyster to make the pearl, you know? He sort of tortures you.
That's one of the greatest metaphors I've heard. Okay.
and I think then you come back and you say, all right, well, listen, I don't like the way that he proposed solving it, but let me see if I can solve it in a great way. And then you solve it. And to his credit, you come back to him and you say, look, I kind of agreed with you. I did this thing. And he says, great, you solved it. He never says you didn't solve it my way or
right.
I really think you should solve it my way. I mean, I don't know if he ever says that. He didn't say that to me. But
when you took the movie back, did he say, go with God or I will kill you?
No, he said, go with God. He said, it's not a good match and you want to do things with it that we're not going to want to do. And I have to say, you know, just a few days ago with this great review in Rolling Stone, and he wrote me a really nice email and he said, I'm thrilled to see the review in Rolling Stone. That's terrific. And
I will now claim this as my own.
Well, his name's on the movie. He's an executive producer
right.
of the movie and they're still selling the international rights to the movie. And
so he was happy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a part of it and he certainly had a role in it.
So your film sat was unreleased for a time and before you got it back from Harvey, you bought it back, I guess.
Well, at that point, we didn't really have a release date. And I knew, we were invited to Sundance last January with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. And it was right at the time when we and Harvey were parting ways. And so, I thought a lot about it. And I thought, should we bring this film to Sundance? It'll be really fun and it'll be a chance for 2,000 people to stand in a room and respond to this thing that we've been working on. And ultimately, I just concluded, we're going to need the time to find the right home, the right distributor, and we're going to feel like idiots if we played the film at Sundance to any kind of reaction. And then it sat around for a year. So we just didn't show the movie to anybody.
You finally hooked up with Magnolia as the distributor? I mean, I don't know if there was a particular reason for that.
Yeah, because we worked with them on Capturing the Friedmans.
So Magnolia, you went back to Magnolia and said, look, will you do it this way? This is the way I want to do it?
Well, I showed it to Eamon Bowles, who's a tremendously smart and intuitive guy. And there's no bureaucracy. On the one hand, we had just done Catfish with Universal Pictures and Rogue and Relativity. And there's this giant machine. And in fact, there are a lot of really talented people inside that giant machine. But everything is a process. And I guess on this, we needed to get back into feeling like it was just a small group of people sitting around a table trying to make the best decisions that we could.
Coming up after a short break, Andrew Jarecki is threatened with a lawsuit over his new film, All Good Things. As always, you can comment on today's interview at kcrw.com/thebusiness. And you can post your views on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and kcrw.com.
Yeah.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with director Andrew Jarecki about his new film, All Good Things. The movie was inspired by the real-life story of Robert Durst, the troubled son of a powerful New York real estate developer. As the film reflects, Durst seems to have known an extraordinary number of people who either vanished or turned up dead. In a fictionalized account, Ryan Gosling plays the Durst character. During the making of the movie, Andrew Jarecki hadn't had contact with the real Robert Durst, but recently he did meet the man.
I was increasingly interested in showing him the movie because from the very beginning of making the movie, we said to ourselves, and I certainly said a lot of times, I'd like to make a movie here that is humane enough and is correct enough and is familiar enough that the real Bob Durst can see the movie and have an emotional reaction to it. Not that he'll agree with everything in the movie,
right,
or not that he'll say, oh, you're right about how this or that murder took place, but that he will be moved and will remember the past through the movie. And he reached out to the distributor of the movie and called. Bob said, you know, I'm trying to get in touch with Andrew. And we had a phone conversation and we agreed to meet and I showed him the movie.
And?
I wasn't there when he saw the movie.
Right. I read in the New York Times that he approved of the film.
Well, you know, he said, I like the film very much. I really, really like the film. It's 100 times more accurate than anything that's been done on this subject. And I cried.
Now, having gone through this long process, the Durst family pops up now as you're about to release the picture and tells you they're going to sue you and Magnolia, the distributor, for defamation. And it's not your friend, your new friend, Bob Durst, but they're concerned about the portrayal of the father.
Well, they actually wrote us an 8-page letter about 2 years ago because they had gotten a copy of an early draft of the script. And they were scandalized and they wrote us this very, very harsh letter saying that the movie is irresponsible and unfair to them and obviously a work of fiction and so on, and that it was unconscionable to portray their family in this way. And then they went on to describe the details of what they didn't like. It was absolutely eye-opening for us because on the one hand, the things that we thought they would have problems with in the movie, they didn't mention at all.
Oh, interesting.
The main issue of the movie, which is what happened to this poor girl in 1982 who disappeared, is not mentioned
anywhere
in their 8 pages. And in fact, that's the problem. If you ask Kathy's family, they say, this family didn't lift a finger to help us when our daughter, sister, the person that we loved and was a intimate part of their family disappeared, they were absolutely unresponsive. And that always led them to believe that, in fact, Robert had been responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the family had helped to cover it up. That
Have
was
they ever
the
publicly
theory.
Denied anything, had any statement about that murder? Did they ever address the suspicion of murder?
No.
Okay,
I mean,
so
the letter goes nowhere near that issue either.
That may be on the advice of counsel, of course, right? Because
well, I mean, the letter was written by a lawyer, but it was clearly communicating the innermost thoughts of the guy that runs the organization, Douglas.
Brother. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a character in the movie that's sort of, you know, inspired by his character. And I think the remarkable thing about it was that the 8-page letter was really about this besmirches the name of our real estate company. It will make people less likely to do transactions with us. They just got the contract to build the Freedom Tower on the 9/11 site. This is a family of enormous means. And for them to complain for 8 pages about the commercial implications of our movie and ignore entirely this missing girl seemed not just callous but bizarre.
Well, what sort of thing did – just give me the example of something they objected to.
At one point, the lawyer says, well, in the film you imply that Bob's father, Seymour Durst, wanted him to run the family business rather than his younger brother, Douglas. This simply isn't true. Right?
Like
we're
that
in a
one.
Legal letter that has nothing to do with – this issue has nothing to do with any legal actionability or anything else. He's just saying – I don't like the fact that your film makes it seem like my dad wanted to pick my brother.
Right.
He wanted to pick me.
He
liked
him
best. Everybody
always
knew my brother was out of his mind.
Right.
I'm the only one that was ever fit for running this organization.
I'm wondering, in this film, you went from doing a documentary to doing something that kind of could have been a documentary, but you decided to make it a fictionalized version of a seemingly very dark reality. I don't want the Durst lawyers on me. You can have them. But,
they're not interested in you.
So why would you want to do this as a feature?
You know, I never thought about making it as a documentary. Certainly not at the beginning, because I thought there's so many things about this story that are going to be more evocative as a narrative piece that I think it will be fascinating to go through this process with actors who can bring so much to these roles, because it's impossible to put ourselves back in that situation. There isn't any footage of the two of them together, of Bob and Kathy Durst together, and yet they had this remarkable relationship that started out kind of wonderful and then suddenly changed.
Let me just ask you, so having done a couple of docs, I guess, and this film, what's next? Are you going to go back to docs or stay with features or...
I don't know. I never know. There's a whole process we go through when we release the film, like, you know, with Capturing the Friedmans. I think, I don't know, I did something like 250 Q&As after the movie. And my wife said to me at one point, you know, I think you have to confront the possibility that you may not be able to talk to every person who sees the film. And I said, well, you don't have any proof of that. You don't know that for sure. But it was interesting because when we were casting All Good Things, I wasn't getting through to Ryan, and Ryan's agent, manager were saying, well, he doesn't want to do anything dark, so just forget it.
He doesn't. It seems like he has a hearty appetite for that, but okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought, exactly. And so I went to the premiere of Lars and the Real Girl in New York, and I saw him from across the room. I didn't know him. I had never met him before, I thought. And he looked up from this group of fans and looked across the room and waved to me and called out my name. And I thought, that's amazing. And he sort of worked his way out of that group of people and came over. And he said, Andrew, it's really nice to see you. How'd you like the movie? And we had this great conversation. And I was thinking to myself, how does he know me? And he said, well, I heard you have this great script and I really want to read it. But, you know, I heard you're looking at someone else. I said, no. I was told that you don't want to work on anything dark. And he said, me? And he said, no, I want to read it. And I said, great, well, I'll send it over. And just as we were about to part, I said, I'm just curious, how did you know me? How did you know to recognize me? And he said, well, don't you remember when you were in LA for opening weekend of Capturing the Friedmans and you were at the Lemley Sunset 5 and you did that Q&A at the 11 p.m. show and I was the guy that asked the question about Elaine Friedman. And I vaguely remembered that there was someone in the dark in that theater and I couldn't really see who they were, and they asked a good question. And it really – somehow the whole thing kind of came full circle for me in a really good way. I just realized that – you know, there was a reason why I was out there obsessively talking about the movie at some level. It came to something good.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us.
Thanks.
Andrew Jarecki is the director of the new film All Good Things, starring Ryan Gosling, Kirsten Dunst, and Frank Langella. All Good Things is now playing in New York and opens in Los Angeles on Friday. Next week, it will go wider. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the executive producer. The theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And now we're on Facebook as KCRW's The Business. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.